because when some of the people came from Kavna to America and they saw that it was a trade for Medina and everything was terrible, there was no Yiddishkeit, there was no Shabbos, no Kashrus, no Taras no Mishpacha, they went back to Europe and they told this to Rabbi Yitzchak Hanan. So he told them they should go back to America and make a kosher. Some say that that's the reason why the Russian Balabatim named the yeshiva after Rabbi Yitzchak Hanan, because he said they should make the Medina kosher. The way to make a kosher is by having a yeshiva, by having more limud Torah. The din is, let me just say one thing about the Hilchos Shabbos. We spoke a little bit about the Dvar Avraham, what he's known for. So one of the things he's known for is an issue of carrying on Shabbos. The din is that you're only permitted to carry within a Rishus HaYochid. What's the definition of a Rishus HaYochid? Rishus HaYochid is an area that has mechitzus around it. Mechitzus have to be 10 tefachim tall, 10 tefachim a little below my waist. So the din min haTorah is if you have a big apartment building, so all the 100 apartments in the building are all considered the same thing. It's all Rishus HaYochid and Rishus HaYochid. They allow to carry from one to the other. Shlomo HaMelech made a takana midrabanan that you need eruvei chatzeres. What does that mean? If one family lives in one Rishus HaYochid, in one apartment, a different family lives in a different Rishus HaYochid, you're not allowed to carry from one Rishus HaYochid to the other. On the level of deraisa, there's no difference. It doesn't matter. Any area that has the mechitzas around it is by definition the Rishus HaYochid. This is a chumra in the Rabbanan that the Gemara has a tradition. This was introduced by Shlomo HaMelech, and a baskol came out from heaven and gave him a big yashikur. Baskol came out and said, Chocham b'ni, alken yismach li bigamoni. And Hashemayim, they were masking with the takonas Eruv Chatzeres. So what do you have to do for Eruv Chatzeres? So everybody, let's say you have 100 apartments in an apartment building. So 99 apartments, 99 families have to give a challah to the one family who lives in the 100th apartment. So the people who live in that one apartment live there, or they're a chapshat, they really live there. If the other 99 families leave a challah in his apartment, so it's considered as if everybody, all 100 families live in the one apartment, and nobody asks on anybody else. That was a takana shlomo HaMelech. So the Mishnah says that there's a leniency, there's a kulah. There's no need for a eruv chatzeres if you have tfisas yad. So tfisas yad, the simple pshat means like this. If somebody owns a big building and he lives in the building, the owner of the building lives in the building, and he has heavy furniture or heavy packages, not packages, heavy trunks, heavy trunks full of his property, and each one of the apartments is considered as if he's the balabos in everything. And even though all the 100 apartments are lived in by different families, it's considered as if they're all guests by him. So there was a question in Europe, what's the din of a hotel or a motel where everything is fully furnished? Every room has heavy furniture. It has the beds, it has the dresses, has all the furniture in it. Is that considered tfisas yad? So in America, most people rely on Rav Moshe Feinstein, who writes in his sefer that that's considered tfisas yad, even though the one who owns the building doesn't live in the building. He lives in America. He doesn't live in Kovne at all. And even though it's not that he retains the right to use your apartment by leaving heavy trunks there full of his merchandise, full of his shmachtas, full of his junk. He's obligated by contract to supply you with the furniture. So the heavy beds and the dresses that are there are not that he retains his shtamshus. This is really the shtamshus of the tenant. He's obligated by the lease to supply you with the beds and the furniture. So Moshe Feinstein is of the opinion that that's acceptable. Rabbi Soloveitchik had the tradition from the Dvar Avraham, because he used to, Rabbi Soloveitchik was related to Rabbi Moshe Feinstein also. Moshe Feinstein and Rabbi Soloveitchik's mother were first cousins. Her maiden name was Feinstein, but they were first cousins. So they were close. They used to talk on the phone all the time. But but Rav Moshe Feinstein had the old style of learning. And Rav Moshe and Rabbi Soloveitchik felt closer to the Dvar Avraham, because he was a descendant from Rav Chaim Volozhiner. And the Dvar Avraham had the new Derech and Limud. He had learned in Volozhin himself, he learned Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, so he was closer to him. So he had the tradition, Rav Soloveitchik had the tradition from the Dvar Avraham. He has a tshuvah and a sefer that that's not acceptable, that if you have a hotel, or like we have, we're in a hotel, he was of the opinion that everybody else is on everybody else, and you have to have a Rubi Chatzeris. So that's why David usually is machmir. So he usually goes to the management of the hotel, gives him a dollar, and he says, I want to rent the whole hotel for religious purposes.
That won't prevent,
and give less than a dollar also. But you have to say, I want to rent the whole hotel for religious purposes. So the fact that you have Nochrim staying in the hotel does not say the whole deal of Eruv Chatzeres, that if all the 99 families leave a challah in 100 apartment, that solves the problem. That's only by Medvar Mamurim if the 99 families are Yehudim, who will not carry without the Eruv Chatzeres, and now that they put in the Baksamats, and now that they put in the challahs, now they'll be allowed to carry. But if you have Nochrim, or you have non-observant Yehudim, and the whole Eruv HaTzeres is irrelevant for them. Ben Kovakot they're going to carry. So the Eruv HaTzeres doesn't know. So what you have to do is rent from the manager of the hotel, the whole hotel. And then you have all of the Shomrei Shabbos of our group who are assuring on each other. So then the Mishnah says, since we're all eating from the same kitchen, it's being catered. So if all the food comes from the same supplier, everybody's eating from the same food, so that takes the place of Eruv Chatzeres. The Mishnah has such a din. Let's say you have parents and they have five children, and each child is married and has his own five children. So you have a whole circus full of parents and their children and grandchildren. Everybody lives in the same house, but each family lives in a different apartment in the building. And then when it comes Shabbos and Yom Tov, they all eat, all the food comes from the grandmother. Grandmother does all the cooking and she supplies everybody with the food. So the Mishnah says if all the food comes from the same kitchen, that can substitute for the Eruv Chatzeres. So that's what David usually does. He rents from the management to be machmer like the Dvar Avraham. If you would be in Kovna, for sure we should be machmer like the Dvar Avraham. We're in Vilna. We're not going to be in Kovna, but still, it was machmer. So that's what the OU used to do that also, when they used to have a weekend in a hotel where there were Nochrim staying also. If there were only Yehudim in the hotel, and everybody's eating from the catered food, so then again, that can substitute for the Eruv Chatzeres. But if you have Nochrim staying in the hotel also, so we try to be machmer not to rely on Rav Moshe Feinstein's kula, that this too is considered Tfisas Yad, a machmer to rent from the management, and then the fact that everybody's eating from the catered food, that substitutes for Eruv Chatzeres. David said there's going to be an issue with the Hadlokas HaNeiros. There's a concept of Plag HaMincha. Plag HaMincha is an hour and a quarter before the end of the day. So there are different opinions, but usually follow the view that the day means, for these purposes, the day runs from sunrise to sunset. You have to divide that by 12 and determine what's called an hour. An hour is not always, most of the time is not going to be 60 minutes. An hour is something here, and the day, the sun rises at 4:45 and it sets at 10 o'clock at night. So it's much more than 12 hours. So Plag HaMincha, an hour and a quarter before the end of the day, according to the charts, is something like 8:11, 11 minutes after 8. So there is the Gemara says there's a big machlokes, when is the end of the Zman Mincha and when is the beginning of the Zman of Myrin. So Rav Yehuda's opinion is, the Tana Rav Yehuda's of the opinion, you have to finish davening Mincha by 8:11, and then you can daven Myrin any time after 8:11. And the Chachamim disagree. They say, no, you can daven Mincha until the sun sets at 10 o'clock. Then you can begin to daven Myrin. And in the din, it's not right to daven, it's not proper to eat the Suda Shabbos before you daven Myra. That's not right. So we want to daven Myra before. We don't want to eat the doomsday. We don't want to, daven ma'ariv at 10 o'clock, or daven ma'ariv at 11:30, it says Akhachav, and then you're going to start making Kiddush. The big doomsday will fall asleep by then. So why did he accomplish Shabbos early? So the correct, more correct practice is to daven mincha before the plaga mincha, before 8:11. And then you can, then we're lenient, and then you can daven ma'ariv after. The Gemara says you can follow either Rav Yehuda, or you can follow the Chachamim's opinion. So that was a common leniency, a common kula in Europe, even in Lithuania. They would daven mincha on Erev Shabbos for the purpose of Tosefta Shabbos, being the Kabbalah Shabbos early, to daven mincha before the plaga mincha ma'ariv after. So we were concerned that in shul they schedule mincha for 8 o'clock. So that would be fine. That'll be fine, number one, if we know that we're going to go to shul. If it's raining, we may not go to shul to daven. And number two, we may come to shul at 5 to 8, and they may want to wait for the locals to come, and they may not begin to, I don't know, they may not begin to daven mincha until 8:15, after the plaga mincha. So that's what we wanted to avoid, having a tarta disaster. We wanted to avoid davening mincha after the plaga mincha and myrit before the shul. So that's why we decided to daven at 3 o'clock. Came up before 2:15. That's Mincha Gedoyla. It's 2:15 here in this part of the world. Or 2:05. The earliest time to daven Mincha in this part of the world is 2:05. So that's why we daven Mincha at 3 o'clock in Kovel. Now Hadlakas Haneris, you have to light the candles before the sun sets. You have to light sometime before 10 o'clock is the Shkia. Usually the practice is that we light the candles by 18 minutes before the Shkia, because there is one obscure opinion in the quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, the opinion of the Sefer Yireim, that the last 18 minutes before sunset are considered Bein HaShemashos. We don't really hold like that at all, but because of that opinion, so that's why the minhag developed, that the women are machmer and the women try to bench lift, complete benching lift, before 18 minutes before the Shkia. But 18 minutes before the Shkia is going to be after 9:30, so we're not going to wait so long. So it says in the Shulchan Aruch, you can't fulfill the mitzvah of Laka. You can't be mekabel Tosefta Shabbos earlier than Plaga Mincha. Plaga Mincha is 8:11 here. And you can't say a bracha on Hadlakas Haneris before 8:11. The question is over here, even if you're going to light the candles after 8:11, the sun is still shining till 10 o'clock. And then it's still light outside for a long, long time after 10 o'clock. So even if you're going to light the candles after 8:11, it's very questionable whether it's really proper to say a bracha. You only say a bracha when you light the candles in such a way that you're causing, you're making illumination. You're lighting up the room. That's why if the lights are on already in the room, you're supposed to, it says in Shulchan Aruch from the Tosfos, you're supposed to turn out the lights, light the candles and turn the lights on again, the shame Shabbos, and then say the bracha. After you lit all the candles and you turn on all the lights, then you say the bracha. So over here, if you're going to light so far in advance, you're going to light, let's say, at 8:30, and then the sun doesn't set until 10 o'clock. So what then? And even after 10 o'clock, it's still pretty light outside for another 45, for another hour. It says the kalam is going to be at 11:30. Very questionable whether it's right to say a bracha even if you're going to light the candles after 8:11. Then you can't light over here with candles in your apartments. That's against in the room. That's against the regulations of the hotel. That'll constitute a fire hazard. And whoever does light candles and doesn't get caught, if there's no smoke alarm, may not get caught. But that's considered geneva. You're violating the conditions of the contract. We rented an apartment, we rented a room in the hotel, on the understanding that we follow the rules and regulations of the hotel. If we do something in the room that they don't allow us to do, that they prohibit us to do, then we're using their property against the rules. That's Zayla. Shol Shalom Midas, our cousin, are using someone else's apartment for an activity which they don't want me to do. So it's really not right to light candles in the room. So what you should do is light the electric bulb. So we usually assume, like we mentioned, Rav Chaim Moser was the one who passed him, that turning on an electric bulb that has a filament in it is considered Eish Min HaTorah. That's considered Havara. On Shabbos, Rav Chaim Moser used to be the doctor, they say, Bar Nehari Ho Eish, Amatzoi Shabbos, and the Havdola. over the electric bulb that has a filament in it to demonstrate that he disagreed with the Maharsham. The Maharsham thought that turning on lights on Shabbos can only be a malacha midrabban, and Rav Chaim Weizer held that it's a malacha minatur. So true, you can say a bracha if your madlik is haneris with an electric bulb, but you have to make sure, number one, that it has a filament in it. A lot of times it's not an electric bulb with a filament. Maybe fluorescent, a neon, or something like that. So that Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said, it's not considered eish minatur. You can't really say a bracha. Another question, many are makpid, that since I don't control the source of the electricity, has to come from the electric company. So if I light candles, and I don't have enough oil in the container, and I'm relying on someone else to pour some more oil, I have to light candles in such a way that it's going to illuminate the room the Kavod Shabbos. So if when I light the candles, there's only a little bit of oil, but I know I have a system set up. Someone else is going to come and pour in more oil later on. So the Gemara says you can't say a bracha on halakas neres chanukah like that. But same thing, you can't say a bracha on halakas neres Shabbos. And that's why many are of the opinion that even though you can use electric bulbs for halakas neres Shabbos and say a bracha, that's only provided that you have a battery in your neres Shabbos. You have control over the whole situation. And the power is there already, the electrical power is there because you have battery. But if you're plugging it into the wall, and you're turning out the lights in the bedroom, whatever, you're relying on the electric companies supplying the electricity, so that's many question that, whether that's profit or central. My personal recommendation would be, you should light in the room, whatever, either after 8:11, before 8:11, whatever. And then don't say bracha, because it's going to be light for a long, long time after that. I don't think it's a good idea to say bracha. When you go back to America, and there won't be such a long pause between Hanukkah and Eris, and when it starts getting dark, so then, when it comes Erev Shabbos, time to ben shlich. So you turn off the lights, and you light the candles, you turn on the electric bulbs, and then you say the bracha. The bracha goes on everything. Here in this country, under these circumstances, I think it would be best just to turn on the bulbs that you want to use on before Shabbos, leave them on, and leave out the bracha. Have in mind, the Rambam's opinion is that one can fulfill the mitzvah by reciting a bracha of the hearer. So have in mind the bracha. But to recite the bracha is highly questionable.
Question was about lighting candles in the dining room.
In Shulchan Aruch there is a discussion that if you have two families eating in the same room, one family is eating at one side of the room, the other family eating on the other side of the room, so does the one who lights second say a bracha on that? So the Shulchan Aruch writes, Rav Yosef Kara writes, and the Sfardim, father of Yosef Kara, the Mechaber writes that whoever lights first says a bracha. But once one balabasta lit already and said a bracha, so the room is already lit up. You're not adding any illumination when you light another two candles or another five candles. The other side of the room, the whole room is lit up already. So that'll be a bracha levatola. The Ramah records the practice for the Ashkenazim. The Ramah always writes the Pesachim of the Ashkenazim. Not that the Ramah is paskening for the Ashkenazim. The Ramah is writing what the Ashkenazim practice. So he says the practice by the Ashkenazim is that even though one family lit at one end of the table, at one end of the room, the other family can light with their bracha on the other end. And the commentaries explain, among our Ram quotes from the Shalom, that there is going to be Tosefis Oro L'Simcha. When the second family lights a lichter, lights candlesticks in the other end of the room, it'll be more illumination. Yeah, but by us, whoever's going to light first is probably going to see to it that the electric light should be on in the room. And once the electric lights are on, then whoever's going to light more candles is not adding any Tosefis or the Simcha. It's just as light as it was before. The whole room is flooded with light. So that's not really right. When one family is visiting by another, let's say the married children come to visit for Shabbos Yom Tov, So in the Shulchan Aruch, it doesn't say that the daughter or the daughter-in-law shall light her own lifetime in Sebra. It says you should do like the Gemara says on Chanukah, you should be mishtatet beprutta. You should be mishtatet beprutta. The daughter who's eating by the parents should give, either pick up the candles and be kind of shutfus in the candles, or give a pruta, give a nickel to the mother to be kind of shutfus in the candles. Then when the mother lights and says a bracha, so the mother includes everybody. That's a special din by Hadlokas Neris Chanukah, Hadlokas Neris Shabbos. If you're mishtatet b'pruta, you become a shutef in the candles, so you're yotze with the one hadlokah. But it doesn't say you should light separately. If the children are come to stay for Shabbos, have their own bedroom, that's always the case by us. They always have their own bedroom. It's not like in Europe, everybody slept in one big room. They have their own bedroom, so that's their private room. So then they can light candles there in the room, and they can say the bracha on an electric bulb. If they're going to use the light in the room, if they're going to light candles in the bedroom, they're not going to come to the bedroom until 4 hours later when the candles go out. So then you didn't gain any pleasure from the candles. The whole idea of Hadlokas HaNeiros is to light the candles and to get hanah from it on Shabbos. So it's not really a smart idea to have everybody light in the room where we're going to eat. The first one who lights should turn on the electric bulb and light candles and say a bracha. But all the others who come afterwards are not adding any illumination by lighting more candles. The whole room is flooded with light already. So it's not really a proper solution. I mean, if one brought their own electric bulb, one brings candles, it's really against the regulations of all the hotels that you're not allowed to light candles. So it's really a violation of gzeila. I'm using the apartment for an activity which the balabas is makbid, I shouldn't do. They don't want anybody to leave candles unattended in the bedrooms. That's not really permissible. This week's Seder is Parshas Chukas. There's a pasuk in the end of Chukas that the Gemara has an interesting comment on. During the Second World War, we all know the story that the Meir Yeshiva was Nitzal. Most of the people of Meir Yeshiva were Nitzal. They went on a transcontinental railroad to Vladivostok, then they went to Japan. It was a whole wild story of Hatzal. So this story was written up in different books. So one of the books, they translated into English the Polish memoirs of a non-Jew who was on the same train. It wasn't a chartered train that was only used by the Jewish people, by the yeshiva boys. It was used by non-Jewish Poles as well. So one of the non-Jews wrote in his memoirs that was published, and it was translated into English, that he couldn't figure out these Jewish people. It was obvious that they were Jewish. He couldn't figure out these Jewish people. Had big books. When the big books were open, they were so nasty to each other. They were so insulting. They would call each other all kinds of names. Idiot, moron, what are you talking about? Poyer, farmer, fool, what are you saying? And the minute the big books were closed, they were the best of friends. So you couldn't understand what's going on. That's the pasuk that the Gemara comments in the end of Parshas Chukas. The pasuk says, Aken ye amar, the Sefer Mohammed Hashem, it'll be written in the books, the history books about the wars of the Jewish people. So it's a very difficult pasuk. So the Gemara has a comment on the pasuk. This is not the simple reading. The Gemara has a comment on the pasuk. When a father and a son are learning Torah together, or the Rebbe and the Talmud are learning, so by the nature of what the learning is like, there has to be a machlokes, they have to disagree. The student has to be a little abusive and insulting to the Rebbe, and the son has to violate a little bit kibbutz. They're considered nasim oivim zelas, as if they're enemies to each other, and they'll be a little abusive. When the Talmud or the son asks the father or the Rebbe, it doesn't make sense what you just said, so he has to be very sharp. But after they finish learning, Then the pasuk says, Esfahe besufa. After they close the big books, then they're the best of friends, and there's ava between them. So this is the way it was in the yeshivas, that they were the best of friends. But then when they would be learning, they would debate a point in the Gemara. They would be a little abusive to each other. The Gemara talks about David HaMelech. There's a pasuk in Sefer Shmuel. Eilish, Mos HaGiborim Asher LeDavid. So the simple pshat in the pasuk is that it's listing off the names of all of the generals and the army. Shnos HaGiborim were the leaders of the army. So the Gemara says an additional level of interpretation in the pasuk, Eilish Mos Givurosov Shel David. This is the great power that David HaMelech had. So the pasuk has there, already the Lashon HaPasuk. So the Gemara says, the simple meaning is that the Pasuk is listing off the names of the generals. So the Gemara says the two words in the Pasuk mean that when David HaMelech went to battle, it was Maksha Atzma Ke'etz. He was very stiff and very tough, and he would shoot to kill. He would fight battles in order to win the war. And then when he would finish, when the war was over and he would be sitting and learning, it would be soft like a tolas, like a worm, very soft. That's not so easy, because okay. A lot of people who are in the army get so tough. And there are people who learn, and they're very abusive to their chavrusas, and later on they can't get married, because they're going to be abusive to their wives as well. So this is a kunst, which is not so easy, to be able to be tough when you're learning, and when you're in the army and fighting a war, and then to be very soft and very reasonable when you're not fighting the battle, when you're not learning Torah, to be soft and normal, in a normal life. There's a book that's entitled Chut HaMeshulash. It's written by a son of the Ksav Sofer. Rabbi Akiva Eger was a father-in-law of the Chassam Sofer. Chassam Sofer had three wives, one after the other. After the first wife passed away, he married the daughter of Rabbi Akiva Eger. Rabbi Akiva Eger, his father-in-law, was only 1 year older than him. And then after she passed away, then he married a third wife. So Rabbi Kivega was one generation, and his son-in-law was the Chassam Sofer. And then the Chassam Sofer had a son, and a few sons. So one son who took over his rabbanus in Presburg was the Ksav Sofer. So the son of the Ksav Sofer wrote this official biography of the three generations. That's called Chut HaMeshulash. He has family stories about Rabbi Akiva Eger and about the Chassam Sofer and about his father, the Ksav Sofer. So he has a story when the Chassam Sofer became Bar Mitzvah, so he prepared a Dvar Torah on his own to say on the occasion of his Bar Mitzvah. Today, usually the Malamed prepares it, or the father prepares a Dvar Torah. But the big Talmid HaChachamim years ago, like Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik, used to say his own, so the Chassam Sofer said his own. So he was learning Baba Kama. And he said over at Dvar Torah, he was an ancestor of a Talmud Chacham who wrote a sefer on Nezikin that's called Kosas Yeshuas. The Gemara comments on that pasuk, V'hoya anmudas itecha chosin Yeshuas Chachmas Vadaas Yiras Hashem V'yartzorai. That the sixth word in the pasuk, anmudas itecha chosin Yeshuas Chachmas Vadaas, correspond to the Shisha Sidrei Mishnah. So the word Yeshuas corresponds to Nezikin. So there's a sefer on the Zikin that's called Kos Yeshuas. There's another sefer called Kosos Yeshuas. Once every 75 pages, it'll be printed on the margin in the Gemara, and the Masoros HaShas will be printed, look in the sefer Kos Yeshuas. So the Chassam Sefer, as a Bar Mitzvah Bacher, said over a Dvar Torah from his Elter Zeda, from the Kos Yeshuas. And he disagreed with it. He ripped it apart. He showed from the Gemara that it was not correct. This was at his Bar Mitzvah party. So his father was a Balabos. They were Yekes. He was born in Frankfurt. They were Frumme Yekes. But the father was not so learned. So the father thought that it was such a chutzpah on the part of his young son. The boy is only 13. He has a chutzpah to disagree with the Elter Zeda. So he slapped him in front of everybody at his Bar Mitzvah party. Wow. So the boy's Rebbe was there, Amnas Nadler. Was there at the Bar Mitzvah party. So he went over to the father and said, why do you slap your little boy? He's right, and the great-grandfather is wrong. The Kosis Yeshuas is wrong. The little boy knows what he's talking about. So he told the Rebbe, Rav Nas Nadler, told the Chassam Sofer as a young boy, he recommended he should leave his father's home. Because if he's going to stay at home, every time he's going to ask a kasha on the Gemara, the father's going to slap him. Kotzuf, how do you have? Going to ask a kasha on Rashi, on Taisus, on the Rambam. He's going to slap him. How do you have the chutzpah to ask a kasha? That's the only way to grow in learning. You have to have chutzpah. Maybe you call it chutzpah to Kedusha. You have to have chutzpah that should be limited to the area of learning. You have to have chutzpah in order to advance in learning. That's important. So that's, the Gemara has this comment on this week's Sedra, on the Pasuk. Haken Yabba B'Sefer Malchamas Hashem. When people are learning, that's the Sefer Torah. When you're learning Sefer Torah, you have Malchamas. It's like the son is abusive of the father and the Talmud is insulting to the Rebbe. Has to say with a little chutzpah. You see, the Rambam wrote a whole Sefer, and the Rebbe disagrees pretty often. So the Rebbe writes with very abusive lashonis. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Doesn't make any sense. That's the way you have to talk and learning with a little bit of chutzpah.